जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यमुना चीरा Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna Balaram, Jaya 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 Krishna, Jaya Goranita, Jaya Goranita, Jaya Goranita, Jaya Goranita, Goranita, Jaya Goranita, Jaya Goranita, Jaya Goranita, Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada, Ananta. Kalila Pravishta Om Vishnupad Paramansa Pari Prajakacharya Astutava Satashishiman Shila Abhay Charanada Vinda Bhakti Vedanta Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Lila Pravishta Om Vishnupad Paramansa Pari Prajakacharya Astutava Satashishiman Shila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishna Vinda Ki Jai Namacharya Shila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Bamsikoho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Mathura Dhama Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhama Ki Jai Chasya Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Shri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai Bhakti Distribution Ki Jai Chinu Ramanreti Dham Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, Text Number 20. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. 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 Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udiraye Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. So this chapter is entitled, How Parikshit Received the Age of Kali. Padair Nunam Sochasi Maika Padam. Padair Nunam Sochasi Maika Padam. Atmanam va vishalar bokshamanam. Atmanam va vishalar bokshamanam. Aho suradin hita yagya bhagam. Aho suradin hita yagya bhagam. Praja utasvin bhagavatya varsati. Raja Utasvin Magavasati Padar Nunam Sochasi Maika Padam. Padar Nunam Sochasi Maika Padam. Atmanam Va Vishalar Bokshamanam. Atmam Vashamanam. Aho Suradin Hita Yagya Bhagam. Aho suradin vita yagya bhagan Raja utasvin magavatya varsati. Raja utasvin magavatya varsati. Please chant.
Padaminam sochasi maika padam.
Padaminam sochasi maika padam.
Atmanam bhavishalar bhokshamanam.
Just Padayar.
By
three legs.
New
numb.
Diminished.
Sochasi.
If you are lamenting for that. Ma.
My.
Ekapadam.
Only one leg.
Atmanam.
Own body.
Va.
Or.
Vishalai.
By the unlawful meat
eaters.
Bhoktasya manam.
To be exploited.
Aho.
In sacrifice.
Sura adin.
The authorized demigods.
Krita yagya.
Devoid of
sacrificial.
Bhagam.
Share.
Praja.
The living beings.
Uta.
Increasing.
Svit.
Weather.
Magas
vati.
Maga vati.
In famine and scarcity.
Avarsiti.
Because of rainlessness.
Translation.
Dharma, the bull, is speaking.
I have lost
my three legs
and am now standing
on one only.
Are you lamenting?
So he's speaking
to the mother cow,
right?
Are you lamenting
for my state
of existence?
Or are you
in great anxiety?
Because
henceforward,
the unlawful
meat eaters will
exploit you.
Or are you
in a sorry plight?
Because
the demigods are now
bereft of their
share of sacrificial
offerings,
because
no sacrifices
are being performed
at present?
Or are
you grieving for
living beings
because of
their sufferings due
to famine and
drought?
Purport
by His Divine Grace
Srila Prabhupada.
With
the progress of the
age of Kali,
four
things particularly,
namely the
duration of life,
mercy,
the power of
recollection,
and
moral
or
religious
principles will
gradually diminish.
Since
dharma or
principles of
religion
would be
lost in the
proportion of
3 out of 4,
the symbolic
bull was
standing on one leg
only.
When
3/4 of
the population
of the whole world
become irreligious,
the
situation
is converted
into hell
for the animals.
In the age
of Kali,
godless
civilizations
will
create so many
so-called
religious
societies
in which
the personality of
Godhead
will be directly
or indirectly
defied.
And thus,
faithless
societies of men
will make
the world
uninhabitable
for the saner
section of people.
There are
gradations of
human beings
in terms
of proportionate
faith
in the
Supreme Personality
of Godhead.
The first
class, I'm going to
read that sentence again
because I think
it's so interesting and
important.
There are
gradations of
human beings
in terms
of proportionate
faith
in the
Supreme Personality
of Godhead.
The
first class
faithful
men are the
Vaishnavas and the
Brahmanas,
then the
Kshatriyas,
then the Vaishyas,
then the Shudras,
then the Mlechas,
the Yavanas,
and at last the
Chandalas.
The
degradation of
the human instinct
begins
from the
mlechas, and the
chandala state of
life is
the last word in
human degradation.
All the above
terms
mentioned in the
Vedic literatures
are never
meant for any
particular
community or
birth.
That's
another important
line, right?
All the terms
mentioned in
Vedic literatures
are never meant
for any
particular
community or
birth.
They are
different
qualifications of
human beings
in general.
There
is no question of
birthright
or community.
One
can acquire the
respective
qualifications
by one's own
efforts,
and thus the
son of a Vaishnava
can become a
Mlecha,
or the son of a
Chandala
can become more than a
Brahman,
all
in terms of
the association
and intimate
relation
with the
Supreme Lord.
The
meat eaters are
generally called
mlechas,
but all
meat eaters are
not mlechas.
Those
who accept meat
in terms of
scriptural
injunctions
are not mlechas,
but those
who accept meat without
restriction
are called mlechas.
Beef
is forbidden in
the scriptures,
and the bulls and
cows are offered
special protection by followers of the Vedas. But in this age of Kali, people will exploit the body of the bull and the cow as they like, and thus they will invite sufferings of various types.
Om Jnanatimanandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksun Milatam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatta Deshatarine Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangolam Gayate Kirim Yakripastamahang Bande Shri Gurundina Taranam Vanchakapatarubhyascha Kripashindubhaivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So just a few thoughts from this purport. In this half of the purport, Srila Prabhupada, Anuttama Prabhu will chant the verse and the second half. Hariwo, nice to see you. We'll chant the verse and the next half of the purport tomorrow. But in this part of the purport, just to give a few thoughts, Srila Prabhupada mentions that the gradation of human beings are according to faith, which I think is really, really interesting. Where is it? The gradations of human beings in terms of proportionate faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So isn't that interesting? It's not about pigeonholing people or, you know, these things are so misunderstood. It's not about some kind of fascism where people are going to be pigeonholed and divided into classes and kept there forever with no social mobility. Taibo, Premitran, can you just say? It's hard to recognize everyone with the masks on, but welcome to all my old friends and new friends. Yeah, so this idea of gradations of human beings according to faith. So the highest class of human beings are those who have the most faith in the personality of Godhead. How beautiful is that? So this, what is this faith? Srila Prabhupada defines faith in beautiful ways in his Bhagavad Gita purports. He talks about how faith is unflinching trust in something sublime. So what's sublime? What's the most sublime thing? The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, with his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and his beauty, his flute playing, his devotees, his holy dham. This is the most sublime, right? So someone who has faith in God, in Krishna, in all his forms, as he appears in different places and in different times, these are the highest classes of living beings, right? And how is faith created? Faith is created by the association of pure devotees. So yeah, just by, Hiranyakashipu says, right, that association is like a crystal stone. Whatever we hang out with, we mirror that, right? So we reflect that. Whatever we keep in association with, we mirror that. So thinking in terms of the mode of goodness, you know, trying to come to the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is kind of like the airport that we have to drive to in order to catch the plane to fly into transcendence. We can't neglect coming to the mode of goodness. We can't neglect those principles of the mode of goodness in order to try to approach Krishna. And what's one of the qualities of the mode of goodness? Transparency. Look, you know, so many beautiful verses in Bhagavad Gita. Samadama tapaso cham shantimarja vinevacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma sabhavajam. But again, it's not about pigeonholing classes of people. It's about becoming transparent. Transparent to what? Transparent to the will of God. Transparent to the will of Krishna. You know how sometimes you see paintings of angels? Especially in Europe, you might see paintings of angels, and they're kind of transparent, right? Their bodies are kind of little see-through, and they don't touch the ground. So these are qualities of the mode of goodness, right? To be transparent to Krishna's will, so that Krishna could express his will through me, or through you, and we could be his agents in this world, like angels. It's so beautiful, isn't it? So inspiring, right? And angels don't really touch the ground because they don't get mucked up by the contamination of the modes of nature in this world. They're beyond it. Because why? Because they're connected to Krishna's will, to serving the will of God. So these are some thoughts on this purport. Just a few thoughts. I had asked Mukhya, is Mukhya? I'd asked Mukhya Prabhu if I could speak on a topic that I'm a little bit inspired about. She gave me permission. So I want to speak to you about this idea. Talked about it yesterday at the Krishna House also. But I wanted to speak to you, so carrying on this idea of becoming... Actually, when I read this verse, I thought, this verse should evoke compassion. Here's Dharma the bull, right? He's speaking out of compassion. He's speaking out of compassion for the suffering of Mother Cow. So this verse, hang on a second, should evoke compassion in our hearts, not condemnation. Whoa. There we go. Yeah, so I wanted to speak to you on this topic, which I think is a lot about compassion. It's called radical personalism. And I'm part of a group, a little cohort of devotees who are kind of brainstorming about this idea, radical personalism. So what do we mean by this term, radical personalism? What would be a good working definition of the term radical personalism? And here's the definition that I like. Radical personalism is the revolutionary idea that asserts, above all else, the personhood of all humans, other living beings, and the supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. Got that? That's the first part, okay? Then next comes, a culture of radical personalism creates a nurturing, loving environment that honors the integrity of every living being and demands its members create a culture of compassion, care, mutual respect, integrity, spiritual understanding, personal growth, and unity in diversity. Sorry, it's a little long, but do you like it? Nice? Yeah. Repeat it? Yeah. It's I think, quite beautiful. It's sort of a product of the brainstorming of this group. There are five of us. Actually, two devotees from here in Alachua. So maybe you know Sina. She's from the second generation. She's becoming a veterinarian, so she's compassionate to the animals. And Sudharma. And then we have Madan Gopal Prabhu from New Jersey, Malati Prabhu, and another devotee named Jadarani from Vancouver. So here is the... Here's the definition again. Radical personalism is the revolutionary idea that asserts, above all else, the personhood of all humans, other living beings, and the supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. A culture of radical personalism creates a nurturing, loving environment that honors the integrity of every living being and demands its members create a culture of compassion, care, mutual respect, integrity, spiritual understanding, personal growth, and unity in diversity. So in Srila Prabhupada's own pranam mantra that he actually wrote himself, he composed it himself, one purpose of his mission is mentioned very prominently, that he's preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya Deva and delivering the Western countries which are filled with impersonalism and voidism. So let's think about it. What about you? What about me? Do you sometimes see, like I do, some kind of impersonalism lurking in your own heart or in your, you could say, meant to be personal dealings? Have you ever felt unseen somewhere at some time? Have you ever felt unheard when you've been trying to share your thoughts or feelings? Or do you ever feel that sometimes you've chosen to not see something in yourself as a sort of a blind spot, right? That something that other people might see in you? Or have you ever chosen to not hear some inner guidance from Krishna or some outer guidance from other people who care about you, who are trying to offer you some helpful wisdom or guidance? So I want to share a story with you that I like this story very much. So this is a story from the 26th Second Avenue days, when they were having their very first initiation, and a young brahmachari whose name was Satsvarupa Das, not yet, at that time he was still Stephen, he wasn't initiated yet, but he was invited to attend that first initiation. But he was a very humble person and he didn't feel qualified, and so he was invited but he skipped out. He didn't come to attend it. And but at that time he had been doing a service for Srila Prabhupada, doing some typing work. And every week at the end of the week he would come and deliver his typing work to Srila Prabhupada in his apartment. And Prabhupada would come to the door and accept the typing work, and that would be that. So this one week after he skipped the initiation, Srila Prabhupada came to the door and he accepted the service that Stephen had done. And then Prabhupada looked at him and said, "If you love me, I'll love you." Isn't that beautiful? If you love me, I'll love you. So let's unpack this story a little bit. What was going on here? What do you think? What does this bring up for you? What's going on in this story? If you love me, I'll love you. Anybody have any thoughts?
Reciprocal.
Reciprocal. Prabhupada was looking for some reciprocation. Yeah, what else? I mean, he was reciprocating, the young brahmachari was reciprocating by doing the service, right? And Prabhupada was looking for reciprocation, but what else? Prabhupada wanted some more reciprocation, right? What else? Anybody else have a thought?
No need to hold back, you can trust.
No need to hold back, you can trust. Very nice. What else? All you ladies don't have to be shy because we have some very brilliant brahmacharis and grihastha men and Prabhupada disciples here, so don't be intimidated. I know it can be tough. Yes? Not really coming from the heart. Beautiful. Thank you so much. What else? Anybody else have anything to share? Yes, Prabhu.
I have a doubt. Every time I heard that, it felt like Srila Prabhupada was conditioning his love into, if you love me, I'll love you.
Srila Prabhupada was, so you're saying that Srila Prabhupada was conditional that if you love me, I'll love you. But still he's offering his love, right? Will you take it? He's offering us his love. Will you take it? Did you ever hear the story, just to put a stick in another story here, you ever hear the story when, also 26 Second Avenue, when there was a very dangerous person that devotees were afraid he might attack Prabhupada? Prabhupada cut up the apple that he used to distribute, and then he put the knife on the plate and he held the held the fruit, the cut up apple, and the knife out to this dangerous person. Isn't that amazing? You, okay, choose. Do you want to take the knife and kill me? Or do you want to take this fruit that I'm offering? That's an interesting point that you're making. Anybody else have a thought? Yes, Chitari Prabhu.
My first thought was, I think, I was just, it was actually a question. Was Prabhupada hurt that Stephen didn't come to the initiation? Because Prabhupada was offering, I think, his initiation, but he didn't come.
Yeah, so maybe all of those feelings could have been there. You know, I'm offering my heart to you, and can you offer your heart to me, right? So yeah, I think all of these are very good answers. Yeah, he was, the young disciple wanted to offer his service, but he had not yet come to be able to offer his heart, right? So yeah, what about speaking about our own failures to love? How painful is it when someone comes to one of our temples for the first time, or maybe even after many times, and no one speaks to him or speaks to her? You know, to me it's like, you know, talk about that knife. It's like a stab in the heart when you hear someone say, yeah, I came to your temple about 6 years ago, but nobody talked to me, so I haven't been back since. You know, it's so painful to hear that. And actually, in Nyuttama Prabhu, he has this story that some city official came to the Denver temple when he was the president, and he had to inspect something. And Anuttama Prabhu asked him, have you ever been here before? And he said, yeah, I was here once and somebody called me a demon. You know, Haribo Radhikeshwar was just like, how painful, right? How painful.
Is that real?
That's a real story. Yeah. So what about when someone makes an assumption about a devotee or a guest based on a bodily discrimination or prejudice? One of our temples, we have a very, very dear devotee who's serving with great dedication. And she's black, she's of African descent. And someone of another culture came up to her and said, what are you doing here? This is not your religion. She was so hurt. She loves Krishna so much. She was so devastated, you know? So of course, because we're all individual persons, we all see things from different points of view. As persons aspiring for the spiritual path of bhakti, loving devotional service, this is my question, that can we learn to honor our differences more fully in moods of unity and diversity? So Srila Prabhupada emphasized the primacy of the personhood of Krishna as the supreme person. Although, of course, Krishna has personal and impersonal energies. Some people like to emphasize the impersonal. Of course, Krishna in the Gita lifts up the personal, but he offers many paths, right? So Srila Prabhupada placed great emphasis on our own identity as eternal individual jiva souls, eternally persons in relationship to the Supreme Person. So in researching this topic, I looked a little bit back in history, and the term personalism in the West first appeared in print in 1799. And there are many different versions or schools of thought of this idea of personalism. So it's really best to call it a worldview more than a school of thought, because there are many, many different versions. But the point is they were emphasizing the importance of human persons in this sense. And this is a quote, the real is the personal. The real, I find that very beautiful. The real is the personal. So it was a reaction to the depersonalizing elements in the industrialization, so-called industrial revolution, Darwinism, and Aristotle's definition of man as the rational animal, right? It was about the dignity of the person. It was about consciousness, free will, and about community, and about how persons can exist in relationship and never in isolation. And this personalist school of thought inspired Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. when he was a doctoral student at Boston University. And it inspired his work in recognizing and uplifting the dignity of every person and in seeing our interdependence and developing the idea of the beloved community, another term I really love. This was, Dr. Martin Luther King didn't create this term, but he popularized it, this idea of the beloved community.
Beloved
community, the beloved community, right? So in many places in his Bhaktivedanta purports, Srila Prabhupada talks about how an impersonal worldview actually encourages material desires, exploitation, and material entanglement. Think about it, right? If the world is impersonal, and if nobody's watching, if nobody really cares what you or I or anyone else does, then who cares, right? We can do any darn thing, and why not? Albert Einstein said that if we think that the universe is neither friendly nor unfriendly, and that God is essentially, maybe you've heard this before, playing dice with the universe, then we're simply, he says, then we're just victims of the random toss of the dice, and our lives have no real purpose or meaning. But, he said, if we decide that the universe is a friendly place, then we would use our technology, our scientific discoveries, and our natural resources to create tools and models for understanding that universe. Why? Because power and safety would come through understanding the workings of the universe and its motives. Interesting, huh? So it seems as though Albert Einstein definitely considered that there was a practical importance of seeing the universe as a friendly place. So I think that we have an imperative given by Srila Prabhupada to exemplify personalist interactions in our ISKCON society through the six loving exchanges of Srila Rupa Goswami that he speaks of in the Nectar of Instruction. And in Srila Prabhupada's purport to that verse 4 of Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada says that the ISKCON society has been established to facilitate the six loving exchanges between devotees. So what are the six? Anybody want to call out one or two? What are those six loving exchanges?
Revealing your mind
and inquiring in confidence. So it's like a two-way street, right? So that, does that mean that tomorrow it wouldn't be blabbed all over the internet, whatever you are sharing with this confidential friend? Yeah, right? So revealing and hearing in confidence. Confidence means I hold it in my heart and I don't share that with others because it's a treasure you've shared with me, right? What else? Four more. Okay.
Then Guhyam.
Okay.
Confidential when you have established relationship.
Right. So Prabhu is making the point that you could say, first of all, it would be giving and receiving a gift. Giving and receiving a gift in Shiva. So that's a nice point. Giving and receiving. So this morning, Nanda gave me a nice bag of a fruit I've never seen before. So now I feel inspired. I wish I could give something to Nanda. What else? Two more.
Offering and accepting
prasadam, right? Prabhupada's secret weapon. Who could understand, right? The power of prasadam distribution. So yeah, these are the six symptoms of love shared between one devotee and another. So what would it look like to prioritize in more radical ways our first and foremost identity of ourselves as persons in relationship to Krishna, the Supreme Person, and to all living beings as his beloved parts and parcels? What would that look like? Can I more consciously try to see and hear what other people are going through, where they're coming from, or what someone's need is right now in the present moment? You know, I often think that our process is Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, but, you know, devotees are preachers and we want to kirtanam, we want to have kirtanam, we want to preach. But maybe it's good to first of all try to hear when we're preaching. What is this person's place? What are their needs and interests and concerns? And what do I need to know in order to open this person's heart to be able to receive some Krishna consciousness? So can I try to care more carefully, listen more deeply in my exchanges with family or other devotees or with friends or coworkers or people that, at the university that I might interact with? And my question is, could this type of awakened consciousness create a sea change in our ISKCON culture, a culture of radical personalism, or the beloved community that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. described? That's my big question. So Srila Prabhupada, in his purports, in his letters, in his lectures, and in his personal dealings, I would say that he boldly beat the drum of a radical personalism inclusive of all living beings. Srila Prabhupada's vision and the vision of all our Vaishnavacharyas goes way beyond the greatly celebrated United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, which was a big step at the time, you know, that all humans should be included and honored, right? But this radical personalism, as this purport in the Bhagavatam was speaking, it's not only limited to human beings, but it's inclusive of all living beings, all animals, all creatures, and honoring the earth, right? So as aspiring devotees on the path of bhakti, it's urgent that we walk our talk and live our ideals, not just remaining philosophically in the headspace. It all needs to sink down deeply into the heart space as well, right? Real knowledge needs to transform our hearts for our betterment and for the benefit of others and for the upliftment of the whole world. Devotees are philosophers, right? Everybody's very philosophical in the ISKCON society. But have you ever heard the saying that your actions are speaking so loudly that I can't hear a word you're saying? You know? So, you know, like when you distribute a book, the person's looking at you. If I accept this book and read it, I would become like you. So they're looking, well, what kind of example are you of these teachings or this book, you know? So a young devotee once asked Srila Prabhupada, this was at New Vrindavan, and he asked Srila Prabhupada, how can I serve you, Srila Prabhupada? And Srila Prabhupada said the most amazing thing. He said, you can go where I will not go. And the devotee was so bewildered because Srila Prabhupada had just come from Japan, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, Texas. Now he's at New Vrindavan, he's heading to New York, then London, then Germany. But he was so bewildered, but Srila Prabhupada, you go everywhere. Where is it that you won't go? And Srila Prabhupada just shot back at him. He said, to the future. I heard this from him directly. So he said, to the future. And by the way you treat the people there, they will know how much Krishna loves them. Isn't that magnificent? This is like my most favorite Prabhupada story in the whole world. By the way you treat the people there, they will know how much Krishna loves them. So I believe this is Srila Prabhupada's radical personalist challenge, that he's throwing down the gauntlet to all of us, to his followers. How do we live? How do we treat other people we meet? Do our actions convince the people of the world that Krishna really loves them? Do we live and demonstrate that love ourselves? This is radical personalism, and I believe this should be the hallmark of what it means to be a devotee. And if we can make this consciousness our shared lived reality, a living love, then this radical personalism can set our ISKCON society apart from others who live and think in more polarized and sectarian ways, right? There are plenty of sectarian and polarized organizations and ways of thinking in this world, now more than ever, right? But this kind of a vibrant, transformed way of being would be world-changing and will reinvigorate the Krishna consciousness movement. It would endear us to Srila Prabhupada. It would attract the hearts of the people we meet and bring us closer to each other as sacred persons, beloved to Lord Sri Krishna and closer to that Supreme Person himself. So is this radical personalism possible for us today? I really believe that it has to become integral and intrinsic to the values and ethics of our devotional lives. And how? In three ways. First of all, in our own introspection. Second of all, in the dealings between ourselves and other devotees. And then third, in the way we interact with the world at large. This consciousness is essential if we want to create the revolution of consciousness that Srila Prabhupada envisioned, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such an important revolution, right? So thank you all so much. These are some thoughts on this idea of radical personalism. I shared some of these thoughts yesterday at the Krishna House in Gainesville, and some of the young people there said, well, can we have a radical personalism group here? We want to start one here. So that was so encouraging. So, yeah. Thank you all so much.
Thank you very much. I had two questions, actually. You know, usually the idea of person is usually, you know, we think of human beings. And so applying personhood to animals, I guess, is it's a little, but actually, now that I think of it, animals have personalities too. You know, we don't really think of them as persons, but they do, you know. So anyway, I guess that's my own question, but it's kind of interesting to apply that.
Yeah, you know, they say man is the rational animal, but you know, you ever seen someone walks, ever visit your family and your sister has a cat, and when everybody walks out of the room and walks out of the kitchen, the cat jumps on the counter and eats whatever is that, you know, the cat's calculating, waiting for everybody to walk out, right?
Yeah.
Eat whatever's on the counter.
And I had one other question. It's like, in those six loving exchanges. So if I offer, you know, like at my business, I have little candies, and I know a lot of devotees, devotees give lollipops and things. So how is that fit in with, I mean, is it only half? Obviously, they're not going to give something gift in return, but if they accept prasadam, how does that fit in with that, those six things?
Well, that's what you're doing, isn't it? That's your offering. You're trying to open their hearts to some first steps of loving exchange by distributing a little bit of prasadam candy, right? Mm. You know, so isn't that a beautiful thing? You take the first step. Mm. Let me take the first step. Maybe someone hasn't taken the first step, but let the Vaishnavas take the first step. And isn't this the mercy of the Vaishnavas? Go out, you know? Go out and take the first step. Show the world how much Krishna loves them. You know, maybe you weren't offering any love, maybe you were only offering abuse and hate, but the Vaishnavas can come and offer some love, even though you haven't taken a step toward that love. So that's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing that.
And also Prabhupada said that when they have prasadam, they're guaranteed a human birth in their next life, so that's not a little thing either.
Yeah.
But I was thinking of this story that really impressed me. Prabhupada was at the airport, and the devotees had brought him a big fruit plate. So he took a little bit of it, and he gave it back, and then the devotees said, okay, I'll go distribute this to the, you know, non-devotees, to the karmis. And Prabhupada said, charity begins at home, and give it to the devotees. So Prabhupada was always thinking like that too. How, and for so long, it was so much about going out, and you know, that's always there, but also taking care of the devotees, you know, your neighbors and your friends.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. Yeah. Did you ever see this letter from Prabhupada to Rameshwar? Of course, Rameshwar was book distribution, we gotta go out, we gotta preach. He was like the main book distribution enthusiast, and you know, at least among them. And Prabhupada wrote him a long letter of different points about distributing books, and at the end of the letter he said, but the highest realization is to save oneself. Mm. And it's like, what? Where did that come from? You know? So if I, you know, like the old example, you're on the airplane, you're going to put on your mask first before helping your child, right? Mm. So if we don't get this, how are we going to, what are we going to be sharing if we don't get it? And just one other point, I really think, could we just eliminate the word karmis from our vocabulary? Because it's just so misunderstood. You know, like nobody really uses the term in the way it should be used, and it just sounds derogatory. Mm-hmm. I remember when my son Gauravani was little, he was in school in Gita Nagari, and they were swimming in a swimming hole that was on the property of the next door neighbor. And the neighbor was kind enough to let the devotee kids swim there. And so all the little boys were swimming there, and one of them, and then the neighbors who owned the property came up, and they were swimming there too. And so this one little devotee boy said, I want to go swim somewhere else because I don't want to swim where there's karmis. You know, and this is like a little guy, right? He picked up our culture already. So how demoralizing and degrading. And nobody, you know, these people didn't know what it means, but it just sounds terrible. So if we could just, you know, eliminate some of these derogatory sounding terms from our vocabulary. And sometimes someone will say, well, Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada called people demons. Prabhupada called people rascals. Prabhupada said this or that about Gandhi. You know, but I believe that we don't have the adhikar to be blasting people so much. You know, Srila Prabhupada was on a very, very high level. And when he would say things, it would change people's hearts. Sometimes even if someone at the moment might have been offended, there's several stories where Rinjani Swarup Prabhu has a story about when the story in Philadelphia when there was a scholar there who he was teaching Hinduism, an Indian man, he was teaching Hinduism. And Prabhupada said, oh, and what is Hinduism? And he had some kind of vague answer, like, no one really knows, or something like that, you know, some kind of crazy answer. And Prabhupada said, he turned to Swarup, his disciple, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who was sitting next to him, and he said, oh, he is teaching Hinduism, but he says he does not know what Hinduism is. What does this mean? And Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj said, it means he's a cheater, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, yes, cheater. So, you know, then what happened was there's this big uproar in the community, the whole Hindu community is, oh, Prabhupada called this big scholar a cheater, and everyone was all upset, right? And so then Rabindranath Prabhu says that actually some years later, this man came back, and he was very repentant. And he was explaining to Rabindranath Prabhu that he was from a Vaishnava family, but he rejected it. And he said, actually, Prabhupada was right. I am a cheater, and Prabhupada brought me back to the path of bhakti. So, you know, so can you do that? Can I do that? I don't think so. So, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Oh, sorry, you had another question.
There was one, maybe you can shed some light on. I remember there was a devotee who was sick, they were in the hospital, and, you know, Prabhupada, no one was going to visit this devotee, so Prabhupada said, okay, we're all going to go and visit, showing the importance of taking care.
How beautiful.
I don't know if you remember who that was.
Mr. Shetty in Bombay?
No, I don't think so. It was one of the devotees.
Mr. Shetty, yeah. Girirash Swami's new book is so full of wonderful stories, isn't it? You know, Mr. Shetty, yeah. Prabhupada said to him, because you're making homes for the devotees, Krishna's making a home for you in the spiritual world. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, Prabhupada, I'm so unqualified, I can't go to the spiritual world. And I wish I remembered it exactly. Prabhupada said, no, I am recommending you. I am going to guarantee that Krishna, you know, something really beautiful. So,
he said that.
Yeah.
Even though he was not a direct disciple, he's from another.
Yeah. But he's the one who took the gun to defend the deities, and you know, yeah. Prabhupada was such an example of radical personalism, wouldn't you say? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. I was just thinking about this idea, it seems it's so simple just to be a little bit personal, but it seems also so difficult. And it seems, I was thinking from a historical perspective as a devotee for so many years, have you seen a time where in general the mood was to be much more personal? And if that was the case, how come the mentality tends to shift over time? And what causes that shift?
You know, I think a lot of times these days devotees will say, oh, I wish I'd been there in the old days when everything was really great. And you know, Yadavar can tell you stories. Yadavar Prabhu can tell you stories. So there have always been good days and there have always been bad days. There were a lot of terrible things going on many years ago and in interim periods and now as well. But it's always our choice. That's what's so profound, I think, that it's always our choice. Like in the old days when people were doing maybe so many crazy things, like I remember some people were, the way they would go on Sankirtan, they'd take a conch shell, stick it in someone's ribs, and say, give a donation. Not everybody, right? So then in the same period of time, you have someone like Jayananda Prabhu. You know the stories of Jayananda. He's a temple president, right? He's like Mukya. He's out emptying the garbage, you know, out at the dumpster. And this guy's walking through the alley and Jayananda starts so graciously talking to him and welcoming him to come in the temple. And this guy's thinking, wow, if this is the guy emptying the garbage, what are the big guys like in there? Of course, he became a devotee because of this touchstone consciousness of Jayananda Prabhu. So there have always been good days and there have always been bad days, but what it's about that personal, you know, taking the initiative to care, which you can change the trajectory of someone's life, you know? Like someone walks in, you don't know what they're going through. You don't know what just happened to them today or yesterday, but if you reach out, if I reach out, we can change their lives just by giving them one little seed of something from Srila Prabhupada. And I think that's what we're all supposed to be doing. You know, we can be in our own little myopic bubbles of, yeah, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to do this, you know, and just ignore, you know. But is that what Srila Prabhupada wanted, you know? So I guess that's kind of my point here, you know. I think it's up to each and every one of us, you know, to care more carefully. To hear more deeply, to care, you know? Yes, Prabhu.
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gives the origin of impersonalism. He said at the junction, marginal state, because we come from marginal, Prabhupada says, the marginal apathy to devotional service, the soul captured by the disease of impersonalism. And it turns into loneliness, it turns into, and he goes on whole list and how the envy developed everything one by one. It's a beautiful explanation of Bhaktisiddhanta. Also in the beginning of your class, by the way, I appreciate your analytical way of affecting our thought and attentiveness.
Thank you.
You said about the faith you get from the devotees. That's what I always thought. But in Bhagavad Gita, Asaddha Dhana Purusha, they are also 17.28. Prabhupada said, the whole purport was actually how the faith becomes love of Godhead. It's the same ingredients by the association. But then I found also 7.21, everybody knows those verses. Yojo yam yam tanum bhakta sraddhaya architam ichyati tasya tasya achalam sraddha vidadami aham. Krishna says, I give faith when you desire. So I put it together in a morning walk when Prabhupada was asked that since Krishna 1861 Ishvara sarva bhutanam, since Krishna directing all the soul through difference barrier higher and lower, why not he directs towards him? Then problem is solved. Prabhupada said he is directing not according to his desire, according to everybody else's desire. So then I think Rameshwara Prabhu came. He said, oh, so we have to develop a desire. Prabhupada said, you got it. If you strongly develop a desire to serve him, to serve his devotees, then Krishna will bring you closer. So Krishna also gives faith, provided we have to have a strong desire.
And how does he give that faith? By sending a devotee to reach
out. Yes.
He sends a devotee to reach out to that soul. When that soul is there's some opening of the heart, right? Some opening of the heart, then Krishna sends a devotee to reach out to such a person.
Yes.
He works through his devotees. Just like a nice example that's, thank you for your analytical reading and deep reading and study. There's a nice example given in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the honeybee is taking the nectar from the flowers and going from flower to flower. And isn't it so interesting that we can't get that nectar from the flower ourselves? We have to get it from the honeybee. So these are the sadhus, right? The
yes.
sadhus are the ones who Krishna is telling the sadhu, yeah, go. Go and give the next step to that person. So he's working through his devotees. The sadhus are carrying the nectar of Krishna consciousness. So, beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. What else? What was an important takeaway for you, or a reflection for you? Something you're going to share with your wife or child or husband or the person across the street? Yes, Chitari, for you.
I really like what you said about hearing and then chanting, you know, like that we, it's so important when we meet someone that we allow them to come towards us, and then we can see what we want to chant to them.
So or be reaching out to them first of all with our ears, right?
Yes, right? Hearing.
Yeah, deeply hearing. Two ears, one mouth, and well, somebody said that there's something about if you have one ear on one side of your head and the other ear on the other side of the head, that between the two ears, okay, in the word heart is the word ear. H at the beginning and T at the end. And in the middle is the word ear. So heart is like, okay, you got the two ears, got the heart, open the heart to hear. You know, so reach out by hearing, you know. You know, where are you coming from? What's
yeah, so many people, they're never heard, and so if you just hear them, they will love you.
Right. So true. Like, you know, old slang discipline, that child needs a good talking to, you know? But what the child really needs is a good listening to, you know? That's what the child really needs, so for the parent or the teacher or whoever is significant in the life to really listen, you know? And that's what we're... Our society is so deprived of that deep listening. Yeah. Thank you all so much. Alachua Srimad Bhagavatam class is famous all over the world. I was so afraid. I was thinking, wow, we've got Pushkar and all these devotees. And they're such big scholars, and I'm not a scholar, and I don't have any devotion. Really scared. So thank you all for tolerating. Thank you all for tolerating my little. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.